Hey everyone, it's Chris Chico and welcome to today's huddle call. Today is Tuesday, August 18th, 2015. And on this call here, I don't have that many people on the line with me. Actually, only two people. And that's including myself. So a total of three of us on the line here. I'm not sure if it's because I know Gary's he's out of the country right now. So he's unavailable. And I think quite a few of our members are kind of finishing off their summer breaks, vacations. I know my kids come back to school. So, I didn't have any specific topics to chat about today. I have a few things that I want to cover on a few of the calls as we get toward the end of the month. So what I'm going to do is just ask for the people that are on the line, just asking if you had any questions or comments or had any points of discussion. You would hit star 5 in order to raise your hand, and then star 5 lowers your hand. So again, star 5 to raise your hand, and star 5 to lower your hand again. And let me see something here. Otherwise, it might be a very, very short call. Yeah, so star 5 will raise your hand, star 5 will lower your hand. What I'll do is I'll mention something that I thought was of interest, just for the benefit of us here on the call today. So I made some notes about a particular topic that I wanted to just mention, and let me bring that up in my notes here. One of the things that in my business, and when I say my business, I mean in general, you know, we have kind of three businesses. You know, obviously Gary and I work together in REI Vault. I do sell products to people beginning real estate investing brand new. And then we also do the real estate business, and so we do deals, et cetera. And, one of the things that that one of my mentors mentioned to me the other day was the fact that, as your business evolves and your business changes, that your role and the role that you play inside of your business also has to change. And it has to do that in order for your business to grow and in order for your business to scale and become bigger and continue to grow. So he talked about a couple different stages of growth and scaling. And it really is the three stages, but and kind of keep this high level. The beginning stage of any sort of business, when you scale, you try to scale via the helper model. And the helper model is where you find someone that is going to help you do more of what you already know how to do. So the example would be a virtual assistant that you hire, and they take and they offload some of those tasks over you, and thus now you're able to do more, and your business does more because you have other people involved. And so you walk through a couple of different stages, and then you get to kind of a stage 3. And stage 3 is where you hire out and you seek out experts to handle the pieces of your business, and then so your role also changes. So an example of this would be maybe for some of you are doing online marketing or PPC. Some people go and they're utilizing that strategy at the beginning cycle of their business, they might go and learn it and learn how to do it, and then maybe hire a VA. And then at that point, then once the VA will help him and certain tasks and certain items, etc. And so they're kind of approaching it from the helper model. And if, say, for example, if you're kind of up and running already in your business and or maybe you're kind of still getting started, but you want to be able to put, say, online campaigns, PPC, and that sort of thing into your business, another way to do it would be to seek out an expert. So instead of me sitting down and learning the nuances of PPC and, you know, everything else associated with that, I would seek out an expert to be able to help me in my business in doing that. And part of that equation is also figuring out, hey, what are the resources you have available? And so you may either do it yourself or you may put it off until a time that you have the resource financially in order to pay somebody to do it, because you don't feel that you don't want to spend the time and energy and effort to learn that yourself. And so that's kind of a little bit of the stages, right, that you transition. So I'm going to kind of, I have three or four different thoughts, and I'm going to tell them separately and then hopefully try to get them a piece all together. So, you know, also one of the things that that as you transition, you know, your role into your business is, whereas in the past you would sit down and you have a particular thing you want to do, and that thing is 10 items long, and you would just go and do all those 10 items. You know, part of the helper model, or getting other people to help you with getting some of these things off your plate, or maybe getting them done in a way so that they take up less of your time, is, you know, breaking those things down and saying, you know, I got these 10 things, but, you know, what are the one or two things that only I'm uniquely qualified to do, and what are the other things that perhaps I can get somebody else to do? Because it's easy just to sit down and kind of go through all the tasks and say, let me just kind of take care of this myself, but that doesn't scale. And so it's figuring out, hey, out of all the things that are on my plate, what are only the things that only I can do? And really looking at that, and asking some hard questions about that. So the example that my mentor gave me was that he publishes his reports every couple months as part of his business. And these reports generally would take 2 to 3 weeks worth of his time in terms of researching the ideas, creating and writing the ideas, proofreading, editing, and then finally publishing this report that then he got a lot of traction off, but it just took up a lot of his time. And then when he figured it, when he started to ask himself some questions, you know, are people reading the report because of my writing style, because of the way I write things in a particular way? And the answer was no. And when he continually asked himself, hey, what are those things that people, you know, he figured out that, or at least he came to the conclusion that, you know, people really come and read these reports because of the big idea behind it and because of the concept. And he realized that, you know, he didn't need to be the guy that wrote it. And he didn't need to be the guy that actually did all the research. He figured out that, hey, if I can get somebody, a good copywriter, to come in, and I could have a chat with them about the big concepts of what it is that I'm trying to accomplish in terms of the report. And then he went out and did the research. We came back and we kind of went back and forth, and he started to write it and I read it just to see if it was in the right frame, and then eventually the copywriter ended up writing the report. It was with my mentor's input, and then in the end, the report was a report 100% as if my mentor would have written it? Definitely not, but was it 80 or 90% to where my mentor said, you know what, this is good, it gives people the value that I'm intending to give from this report, gives them the big picture and the big concepts? And the answer was yes. And so now he took a process that took 3 weeks of his time and then brought it down to only, you know, 4 or 5 hours, maybe 2 days worth of his time. So significantly cut that down. And so part of the process is also looking at everything you do, and really from a critical perspective is figuring out, okay, what are the things that only really I can do and that nobody else can do? And getting those other tasks to somebody else. And part of the process also as well is figuring out how you work best. And the example of that would be, let's say that I wanted to write. And I have three scenarios for writing. Let's say I needed to sit down and I needed to write something for the business, whether that's a report, maybe I need to do a video script, or whatever the case may be. So example one would be is I sit in front of my computer with my intention to write in the computer, and I set aside an hour's worth of time, but when I sit down, I get distracted, and just when all said and done, I only write for 10 minutes, and that's it. That's the most work that I can get done. And so then Example number two, let's say that I decide, you know what, this isn't working, so I'm going to go to the coffee shop. And I went to the coffee shop, and I sat down with the laptop, and I was a little better there. So I wrote for 30 minutes. I'm supposed to write for an hour, but I wrote for 30 minutes. And so that was better than sitting at my desk, but still not really taking advantage of the time. So let's say I decided then to go to the beach, and I took my notepad with me, and I said, you know what, I'm going to write on the beach. I'm going to sit for an hour and write on the beach. So I sat down for an hour on the beach chair, and I wrote. And ends up being that I got an hour's worth of writing done at the beach, more so than anywhere else. But I wrote it by hand. So now I have to get someone on my team to take my notes and to transcribe them and go through the process, maybe a couple hours of transcribing those notes so that now we can have the final work product. And so that necessarily isn't the most efficient thing for them, right? So the distinction is that it was the most effective way for me to do an hour's worth of work, but it's not necessarily the most efficient way for someone else, right? Because now they have to sit down, they have to figure out, they have to go through the process of figuring out what I wrote and everything else. And so the big thing about that is the fact that part of the process is figuring out how you work best and how you can produce the most value for your business, and in what way is it that you need, and what's the environment, what are the circumstances that you need in order to produce the best output for your business, which may or may not be the ideal way to get something done. So in other words, ideally it would be that if I was to sit down and write for an hour, that I would write on my keyboard and then I would pass that off to someone else and they would get a document, but then they could just take it to the next step. That would be the ideal way for the business, ideal way for that somebody else. But I only got 10 minutes worth of output. So for me, the ideal way wasn't necessarily the ideal way for the process in the business. In other words, we have to now go through an additional process to get that final work product, but it was the best way for me. So part of that is as you kind of move forward in your business, is figuring out how you work. How do you work best? How do you work most effectively? What's the schedule that works best for you that may not necessarily be best for the other people in your company, but because you're the main driver of revenue and the main, it has to work for you. Otherwise, then, you know, it's inefficient and you're not going to give the best you can for your business. And so then now the question that becomes is, how do you figure out, right, how you work best, and how do you figure out what you're best at? And so for me, the thing that I have found, and I'll tell you a story, actually. I was talking with one of my coaches. When I say one of my coaches, meaning someone that I hired on a monthly basis to coach and to help me, etc. And I was talking to him about three different opportunities that I was trying to analyze. And I'm not going to get into the specifics of the opportunities, but I'm going to tell you kind of what the framework was. So I had three options. Option one was the one that could generate the most amount of money, you know, in a gross way, you know, gross dollars that I could collect. Option number two was kind of another opportunity, another way to kind of take advantage of the opportunity, but not perhaps achieve the most money. And option number three was attacking that opportunity, but not making making very little money from it. And so then I was asking him a question, and I was trying to make a decision, and I was really looking at it in terms of what's the most amount of money that it's going to produce. And what he mentioned and what he said to me is that he thought that I was looking at them incorrectly. He said that I have to look at them in terms of a couple of different perspectives. Number one is how I work best within that opportunity, whether or not I can contribute to those opportunities. When I say how I work best, meaning in the way I work, and also in giving people giving that opportunity my unique ability. And then also another frame that he asked me to look at it in terms of the work that I have to put in. So let's say that option one gave me the biggest opportunity to make money, However, though, it required me to do all of the work. It required a lot of time and effort on my part. And let's say option number two didn't give me the most money. However, though, it allowed me to take and get somebody else involved and put some of that workload off on them and allowed me to just kind of give input and then kind of take a hands-off approach, yet still receive a significant amount of revenue, even though it wasn't as much as it was for option one, then, you know, perhaps then would that be a better option, right? And so when all said and done, it ended up being that option one was not the ideal option for me. That option number two was the ideal option because of what he had asked me to look at. Because option two, I can get somebody else involved. Option two, I didn't have to do all the work myself. And so all these different reasons, all of a sudden now, you know, I looked at things differently. And, you know, had I done option one, it would have still been successful, but I would have been, you know, knee deep into option one and gotten all this work done. And in the end, I would have looked back and said, you know, if I would have never, you know, maybe I would have had second thoughts and said, well, I didn't realize it was this much work. So then the question is, how can you take that and apply that story and apply that to your situation and really apply some of the things that I talked about in terms of how do you work best and how could you take and figure out what your zone is and get other people around you to help in helping you to complement you and to scale your business. And the best way to me that I have found, so the way to do that is Peter Drucker wrote a small book. You can buy it on Amazon. I believe it's called Know Thyself. And just the purpose of the book is that in order for you to grow and to achieve more and to kind of move in life, that you really have to internally know you and know yourself, how you operate in you and everything about you, because from there, then now you can then expand and make whatever appropriate changes are or work around maybe some of your deficiencies, because sometimes it's easier to just kind of work around things versus trying to overcome. But though, you know, and I've taken a variety of different personality tests, everything, I mean, all of them, I've taken all of them. And the one that I have found to me that has been the best one is one called the Colby, K-O-L-B-E. A index, Colby. If you go to Colby, K-O-L-B-E.com, you can take the Colby index. It's $60 or $50, I think. And the reasons why, to me, that test has always, I've always come back to that, is because a couple of things. Some of these tests you take and the report you get is 20 pages long. And now I feel like I got a project, you know, to figure out how is it that, how I operate and, you know, how I can maybe get other people to kind of come in and maybe help complement some of my deficiencies. And to me, I found it a little bit overwhelming. The Colby test, on the other side, the results can be seen on one page. It's very simplistic. However, though, the simplicity of it is somewhat misleading because there's a lot of insight. It's, you know, they give you a scale from 1 to 10 on various different things. And there's grades. It's not like just black and white, either you're A, B, or C. It's you're A, but you could be a light shade of A or a dark shade of A. You're B, but you could be a light shade of B or dark shade of B or an overlapping between A and B. So there's different nuances associated with that. And if you were to take the test, which I highly recommend you take, the author wrote a book on Amazon. You can pick it up in the Kindle, called Striving Zones. So instead of striking zone, it's called Striving Zone, S-T-R-I-V-I-N-G. And how it's called Striving Zones, How People Act When Free to Be Themselves. And the book really piggybacks on the test and kind of explains the nuances of the test results, so you have a better understanding of it. And I think to me, it's really insightful and I think worth the effort to really take the time to know you and how you operate, more so than anything else. Because from that, you'll be able to, I think you'll be able to achieve success much faster. So the example I'm going to give you, and I'm going to kind of not go too deep because if you haven't taken the test, you're not familiar with the Colby test, then some of these things may not make sense. But in the Colby, one of the items is called a fact finder. And the fact finder is somebody who gathers information. So I tend to be someone that gathers a lot of information. So I tend to be someone that I'm not going to go in and say, oh, I think this is a great idea. Let me act on it. Let's launch it. Let's go. I'm someone that is going to want to gather research and gather intel and information. It also, that particular test result, the fact finder, also helps me in kind of some of the things I've done. If you think about what I did with virtual wholesaling and even what we're doing now, it's kind of taking the concepts and information and compiling it and putting it together in a system and a framework that makes sense. So that's the test result for me. However, though, when I look further down and deeper into that result, there's a scale from 1 to 10, and I'm more of an 7 or 8 on that result. So what's the difference between an 8 and a 10? Well, the difference is I'm not a really good finisher. So I can create the framework. I can create, take it to a certain extent, but I have a hard time finishing that. So if I'm looking for someone that I'm going to hire to take what I create and then take it all the way through to the very end, then I need somebody who scores a high on a fact finder. So if I'm hiring somebody, I'm going to have them take that test. I'm going to try to find somebody that I know that, hey, I know I can take it this far, but I really need somebody who's really, really, really detail-oriented, a 10 or a 9, and now they can take it the step of the way through. Another example is I'm a low quick start. So the low quick start is I'm not somebody that's going to go out and get an idea and then just go and, launch it and try to do something. So let's say that I'm looking for someone to help me, let's say my real estate business. I say, you know what, I think that there's some really good opportunities out there for us expanding our deal business and looking at other sources of business. And so I'm going to go out and hire somebody to help me with that, to kind of spearhead that. So in that example, I wouldn't pick somebody that was just like me. I wouldn't pick someone that was a high fact finder because they would be in the research mode. I need somebody the opposite. I need somebody who's going to be a quick start, who's going to go out and bring me all these opportunities, and it's going to counterbalance my nature of, hey, we got to do research. We got to figure this out, figure that out, talk to this guy, talk to that guy. Let's analyze all these things. But at least I would need, in that scenario, I would need that initial person to go out and search and seek and gather and say, hey, man, I think these are like the three best opportunities, and here's why I think they are. And so I think that, so the reason I gave those two examples is, again, it's a combination of knowing yourself, but then, maybe using the same tool that you come to better understand yourself so that you can better understand others, so that when you're bringing people into your organization and to help you in your business, then now you can bring in the right people that are going to complement you, that are going to counterbalance you and your personality traits, your tendencies, and be able to, progress you further in an effort to help you scale and be able to help grow your business. So I know that's not real estate specific, but those are things that I worked through over the last week. I keep a journal that I write. I actually keep in my closet, my whole closet for my office. I have a stack of journals that many times I'll go back and I'll go back a year, 2 years and say, hey, what were some of the things that I was striving for, thinking about challenges and trying to see if, hey, am I thinking the same way as before and I just don't see it, et cetera. And so the reason I say that is because those are things that I wrote down in my journal. And so as we before we got on the call, I just kind of went through that and I said, hey, maybe these are some of the things that perhaps you guys would find insightful, or maybe they can help you in some way. So that's really the main thing. I don't have anything real estate specific. I don't know if that's a disappointment or perhaps a relief, but I'm going to look to see if there's any questions. I know that the call is light in terms of people attending. Actually, we had some people come into the call. But if you had a question or you had a comment, whether it be about this or about a real estate related question, you can hit *5 you'll raise your hand. *5 raises your hand. *5 will then lower your hand if you change your mind or you hit *5 by mistake. And I'll wait a few seconds. If I don't have any other questions, I didn't have any other topics really to discuss. And as always, I would ask if last call I mentioned about a seminar that I attended, and on the previous call I kind of went through and some of the concepts about that seminar, and a few people emailed and said, hey, that was insightful, hearing about some of the stuff you learned about the seminar, and so you could share some of these things with you. So in an effort to try to maybe mix things up, so I thought I'd share some of these things that that I thought about and kind of learned and processed this week. So again, star 5 will raise your hand. Star 5 will lower your hand. And I'll just wait a second. Let's see. Justin Lee.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, buddy.
Hey. Hey, I missed the beginning, so you might have touched on this, and I've actually just, I haven't been on the call in probably 3 or 4.
Okay, no, your connection is really bad.
Is that better?
Oh, yes, much better.
Okay. So I was going to say that I haven't been on the call for a few weeks just with travel and holidays and whatnot, and I missed the first bit of today, so you might have touched on this, but I know that there was talk of again, trying to get a group of us together and do some sort of masterminding or best practice sharing, and I know that it's sort of you and Gary talked about tabling that to after the summer. I'm wondering if there is any update on that. That was my only question. I'll mute myself out and listen.
Okay. So in terms of that, Gary and I, we did a little bit of a mastermind in Dallas, and actually we didn't get that many people to show up. And so then now, because of the summer, him and I had not really talked about it. I know that the only thing I can say is we haven't had an active discussion about it. I'll make a mention to him. I know that we've had to figure out when in September. I know I have a meeting of sorts middle of the month, and also November and December, and so it's just trying to fit that in to the equation in terms of travel and everything else. I think we were just kind of a little bit disappointed in the participation in the last time, and I know that, hey, not everybody can make it, et cetera. So the only thing I can say is I'll make a note of it here to ask Gary, and maybe we can let you guys know if that's something in the works or not. I can say that Gary and I have not had any sort of conversation about it since the last one. That's just the honest answer. I'm not saying it's good or bad, but that's maybe it's just because of summer and we've been busy with traveling and everything else. Graham. Hello?
Hey, Chris, it's Graham.
Hey, how are you?
Good. My question is, I've been hearing a lot lately about people using VAs for skip tracing. And we've been using a technique recently that someone, and I forget who now, up in, I went to the Virginia area for selling our property, which is calling all the recent cash sales and that have been bought on the MLS and then pitching them our properties as a better way to get property. It's been working really well, so I'll vouch for that. But taking it a step further, I've been hearing VAs using skip tracing in order to basically cut out calling the real estate agent and just going directly to the seller or the buyer, directly to the buyer that bought recently in the same neighborhood. And just want to know if you had any experience with that and if you do a lot of skip tracing and what you use it for.
You know, we have it on the buyer side. We found that a lot of the buyers, we find that we've been able to get the numbers successfully for buyers. So we haven't, most of the skip tracing that a lot of the people do, at least to my knowledge, is, you know, happens to be on the seller side because they're trying to track down sellers. On our side, we have, like, for example, when we look up a property or even whether it be from the MLS for recent cash buyer sale, we would take the name of the corporation and we would look on sunbiz.org, or we would take that corporation name and put it into Google as well. So either we'd go through the docs on sunbiz.org, or we'd go and figure, you know, that corporation name would show up on the search results either on LinkedIn, on Facebook, or a variety of different ways. And typically, you know, we can't find all of them, but we've been able to find, you know, 60, 70% of them by doing that just kind of on the buyer side, that research, because many of them end up being a corporation, and typically we can find out who the people are, and we trace them that way. So we have to, okay. Is that what you've been doing with the buyers?
No, well, I mean, I have been basically going on the MLS, finding all the cash sales recently happened, then contacting the agent that previously represented them.
Okay.
And said, yeah. Hey, I've got a pocket listing. You had an investor that bought in this area recently. I have another property they might be interested in. I send out, you know, basically a blast email to within a mile range of all the cash deals in the last 3 months. And 25% of them will contact me back, and I usually find a buyer or two that way. But I'm thinking a way to cut the agent out would be start gift tracing the buyers that are cash deals recently, and then going directly to them and not having to, you know, use a middleman. Not that I
yeah, the
that
thing
agent,
I would
the agent pays himself, but it would just be, I think, one, being able to contact the buyer directly, I would prefer.
Yeah, I think, I mean, and that we've done it just by, have you tried, like, say, if you find the buyer in a XYZ corporation, looking that company up in sunbiz.org, looking at who the offices are listed, and sometimes they have a phone number and an address that's get listed with them. Is that something you've tried or not?
No, I haven't. And a lot of these buyers, if they aren't in corporations, are just individuals. But I just know that Robert Nickel, the guy that you turned me on to for VA,
yeah.
He's using some VAs exclusively just for that. He's just gift tracing cash buyers, you know, in his area, I think, to, you know, unload properties. So I was thinking I'm starting to hear it more and more around, and if you had any experience in that. But, yeah, going to Sunbase, I guess I could do my own tracking down that way for any.
Yeah, actually, I think Justin may have some specific. Let me see if I can bring Justin in. He might have some specific. Let me see if I unmute you. Justin.
Yeah, hey, Chris. Hey,
hey.
We started doing this about 3 months ago, and I think that we've closed at least three now deals using this strategy of going to the agents. And let me tell you why I like going to the agent first and not cutting them out. Reason number one is that the data is readily available, so when you pull that info out of the MLS, I instantly get that agent's name and phone number. I don't have to screw around wasting time on Google. But the big reason why I'm not worried about going directly to the buyer is the way I look at it is it's getting the agent on my side. It's helping me build my agent database who get all my deals anyway. And I can tell you on two of the deals, the second time around, we went directly to the buyer because we had their contact info. And in fact, one of them, the buyer came to us directly and said, hey, I really like that deal that you had. What else do you have? So I look at it as, you know, paying a small commission on the deal to build out agent a database, because I can tell you now when we blast out deals, we've got like people contacting us saying, hey, my buddy Fred over at Coldwell Banker forwarded this to me, and you know, I've got a buyer for it, et cetera, et cetera. So our philosophy is, whether right or wrong, we're not worried about cutting the agent out on the first deal, because you know, what ends up happening is we end up getting with the buyer after the first one anyway.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Yeah, I can vouch for it too. We've used it now, I want to say, for our last five sales. It works like a charm, just contacting, you know, 20 to 50 agents that have recently sold a property similar to ours. It's been working, and we just have them tack their own commission on top, whatever they want, and it's been working really well.
So we've got a question for both of you guys. Justin, I think you're still on. Is do you give the agent a net price and then you ask them to add their commission, or are you giving them a price that already has a certain percentage of commission in there?
We give them a net. We say, here's our net deal, and tack your own commission on top. And some agents will tack on $1,000, some tack on $4 or $5. I leave it up to them as long as we get net what we're looking for.
And what about you, Justin? I don't know if you're still there. Okay. No, he might be muted, or maybe they have lost him. Okay.
All right,
well, that helps.
Thank you, Chris. That was a great answer. I'm going to stick with what I'm doing then.
Okay, perfect. It's a lot easier.
Yeah.
All right, perfect. Thank you. Thanks, Justin. Though I'm not sure if you can hear me. Okay. All right, so that was good. That was good intel. Star 5 to raise your hand. Again, star 5 to lower your hand. Hi, who's this?
This is Mike.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
I have a beginner's question on hang-ups.
Yes.
Do we call hang-ups from the email we receive from sales team, or do we wait for Podio to process their thing and then use the Podio list to call hang-ups on, or does it matter?
Well, there's two variances of hang-ups, right? There's a hang-up that is left as a voicemail message, but in the end, they listen all the way through, but they just hang up and don't leave a message, and so those are marked inside your Podio workspace as a hang-up, right? So those are ones to call, and then you have also the hang-ups that never make it to voicemail. So in other words, if the voicemail message is 3 minutes long, maybe they listen to it at 2 minutes, and they just simply hang up. The question I had, and I would have to get back with you, we're just in the process, we just figured out a way to parse all that to create a module inside of the Podio just for hang-ups. So you have really three types of leads. You have messages, you have false messages where somebody, you just get like a 2-second recording of somebody hanging up their phone, and then you have like a true hang-up where they never make it to the voicemail message. The first two, the messages and the false positives, they're in your Podio workspace and the main seller workspace. The other one, I know that we were in the process of rolling that out to everybody, but I'm not sure if that has been 100% done. I would have to find out from Gary. I think that they're in the process of doing that.
Okay.
Just for the record, everybody on the call, I could find out, and I'll send an email to you, but everybody else too as well.
Okay.
Because in essence, you could call, the way that works with the voicemails, the emails, is if I call in, as soon as I call in, you get a notification saying, hey, Chris Chico called in, and then when I leave a message, you'll get another email that says, hey, I left a message. So you'll have two emails. So one of the things you've got to make sure is you don't want to call somebody as a hang-up when, in fact, they left a message, because then there's a bit of incongruency there. So what we had created is a way to parse them out so that then you have a separate app in Podio that's just for hang-ups and nothing else.
Okay.
So just make it more efficient. So I'll make a note of it to let me just make a note of it here, and I'll send an email to everybody too as well. But I you got to give me probably two more days or a day,
sure.
Maybe because Gary's out, and he's the one that was in charge of that
okay.
and putting that in place. But I'll get you an answer on that either from me or Gary over the next day, and then also send an email to everybody also too as well.
I appreciate it.
All right, perfect. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
Okay. Just make a note to myself. All right, so again, star 5 will mute. Star 5 will raise your hand, and star 5 again will lower your hand. So star 5 to ask a question. All right, so I don't have any other questions. I'm glad that we had that answer from you, Graham, about the question about the buyers, because we just got ourselves a duplex, just got it like a day ago. And we're thinking about pricing, but one of the things is definitely going to get a list of agents pulled on that and try to get some new blood in order to us to try to see if we can maximize our pricing on that. So I want to thank everybody for being in the call today. The call recording will be available. I know that the call was very sparse at the beginning, but we had a lot of people enter midway through. So if you wanted to hear the topic that I was discussing or maybe miss some of it, the call will be sent out, and then you could listen to the rest of the call. And as always, if you have any, if you need any help, you can always reach us at support@salesteamlive.com, support@salesteamlive.com, or support@ariagold.com. And or also if you need any sort of deal help or need help with anything related to deals, that would be dealhelp@ariagold.com, dealhelp@ariagold.com. And as always, suggestionbox@ariagold.com if you have any suggestions about anything that we could do better. So I want to thank everybody for being on the call today. I'm excited. Although I had a great time with my kids and we went lots of places, I'm kind of excited to kind of get back into a routine and start in the fourth quarter and bang some houses out and make lots of money. So hopefully you guys feel the same and we're ready to get rocking and rolling. So thank you everybody for being on the call, and I'll talk to you guys soon.